Okay, we are now in the third installment of our study of the Shiva Denachemta. We're looking at the Haftarah that would normally be read this week on the Asura. And again, the question arises, we're skipping around Yeshayahu. And by the way, so far we've gone sequentially, Perek Mem, then Mem Tet through Nun Aleph, now Nun Dalet. Next week we're going back to Nun Aleph and then be earlier in Nun Dalet than this. And so that we have to figure out like what the scheme is about. And as I put in a footnote here, even though this Shabbat we won't be reading on the Asura because it's Rosh Chodesh Elul, and so what we do is we attach it 2 weeks from now to Roni Akara in Kitetse. Nonetheless, we're going to study it because we're studying the seven in order that they're normally done. Okay, so before getting into the Haftarah itself, I want to point something out here that goes back to the tradition from the Beit Midrash of Rashi. It's from Sidur Rashi, although it shows up famously in Machzor Vitri and in other works of that school. And Rashi, by the way, did not write this Sidur, it was written by his students. And he has Ve'elu Simanei Haftarot. Haftarot is misspelled, as you see, Mishivasa B'Tamuz Ad Sof Ha'azinu. And this is the custom of the Haftarot that are read during this period. The famous acrostic for it is the Shach Noah Arak Sedash, right? Which is Divrei Yirmiyahu. He lists them all. Shimud V'Hashem, Chazon Yishayahu, Nachamu Nachamu Ami, Vatomer Tzion, etc. And all the Haftarot, the three Haftarot of Puranut and the seven Haftarot of Nechama, plus two more. This Dalet is Dir Shu from Tzom Gedalia, and this is Shuva from Shabbat Shuva. So it gives you a list that walks through. But Rashi makes a point here that gets then expanded and amplified upon in later works, which is he says the following: Kach derech, and I underline it. Kach derech menachamim lenachem maat maat. In other words, nechama has to come slowly, and he gives an example. Amar lenacharav. Nechamayo teridai. Somebody's been devastated by something. You come up to somebody whose husband was killed climbing up to the 106th floor on 9/11. I was just talking about 9/11 to some of my students, and you try to give them nechamayo teridai. D'meikem yishomer lemachazer aptachim lemachar tiyamelach. Coming and telling him all these great wondrous things that are going to happen when they're at the bottom of the pile is like coming up to a beggar and telling him tomorrow you're going to be a king. It's too much. It's unbelievable for them, and they can't accept it. There are other modes in which this is true, is that if you come to somebody and try to give them too grand of a picture, it is insulting to their loss. And so it has to happen in a slow fashion. And I think that's what happens here. So we're going to do two things here, very simply. We're going to go through the Haftarah, read it, and see what it means. And then try to figure out why this is an appropriate message to come where it does in the order of the Haftarot. We're not going to look at its place within the order of the Nevuot of Yeshayahu, but I will contend again that this is a third voice. It could be one Navi with three voices. It could be third Navi, a different Navi with a different voice because it's got a different message. And the Minhag Yisrael, which again is quite ancient, is to take these messages and read them in this order. Like I said, l'nachem ma'at ma'at, but also in an order that makes sense. And so again, I appended at the beginning of this, nachamu nachamu ami, because the Navi is one of that group, or is one of the voices that are supposed to be menachem. And notice that we have the phrase l'nachem in the past Haftarah also. And here it shows up one time, which is the very beginning, ani asora lo nuchama. So you who are impoverished and who are torn by storm, as it were, and has not been comforted, and here's the message that's going to happen. The Haftarah is short, and we're going to take a look at afterwards is a proposal that I have about what the message of the Haftarah is based on its mivneh, based on its structure. But let's go through the words. Anytime we want to study Tanakh, the first thing I do is go through the words, make sure we understand the words. And so he approaches, now who's he approaching? Is he approaching the city? He's approaching the people? And the answer is yes. In other words, there's been a confluence, and we saw it last time also in Vatomer Tzion, there's a confluence and a deliberate blurring of the identity of the city and its people, and the relationship between Hashem and the city, as the city being Ki'ilu, the wife of Hashem, and the city and her children, as the city being the mother, and the children being the children, or the lovers, as it were. All right, so here we go. Ani asora lo nucham. All right, you have not been comforted. Hine anochi marbitz bapuch avanayich. I am going to lay in. Puch is evidently a very fancy and expensive gemstone. I'm going to lay puch into your stones. Visadtich basapirim. I'm going to found you with sapphire. Now, the description here is that I'm going to establish your walls. Now, if you recall from last week, Chomotayich negdi tamid. God says your walls are always facing. I'm always thinking about your walls, the walls of your city. And now I'm going to inlay those walls with precious gems. The samti kadchod shimshotayich. Shimshotayich here seems to be your windows, and I'm going to inlay them with also precious stones. Usha'arayich lavnei ekdach. Now, an ekdach, as we all know in Hebrew, is a pistol, but ekdach seems to be come from the word ligdoach, which is both about, to, in modern Hebrew, to drill, but also means to inflame. Ki esh kadcha v'api, we have in Hazinu. So, sharayich lav ne'akdach, which means you picture stones that are like on fire, meaning like they have such strong light that comes from them. V'chol gvuleich lav ne'chepetz. Now, gvul is an interesting word, because we think gvul, we think about border, a line that separates two countries or two properties. But gvul also means your territory. Hasem gvulech shalom, chelo chitim asbiech. That's not just the borders of the whole area. The whole gvulech labne chayfetz, which means you picture here, kind of like people used to talk about the golden in Medina, you know, that there's gold in the streets, and kind of like the way that Sefer Malachim describes Shlomo's Malchut, just gold and fancy gems everywhere. Okay, so the first two psukim are Hashem speaking to the city and saying, I'm going to turn you into just a splendorous place of all of these fancy stones, which is why the next pasuk is just so jarring. V'chol banayich limudei Adonai v'rav shlom banayich. Limudei Adonai means lomdei Hashem. In other words, all of your children will be those who learn from Hashem. V'rav shlom banayich. And there'll be great peace among your children. The drasha is very famous. Atuyeh banayich, ele banayich. And the psukim here seem to be kind of jarring left to right and unclear how they connect. It's like the old saw goes. You know, in Parak and Tehillim, we don't know what one parak has to do with the next parak. In Mishlei, we don't know what one pasuk has to do with the previous pasuk. And in Iyov, we don't know what one word has to do with the previous word. Right? But here, it does seem to be kind of jarring where things don't connect. You will be established through righteousness. Rachakimi osha kiloti ra'i. And again, the words don't even seem to make sense. Distance yourself from oppression or from abusive, exploitative practices. Kiloti ra'i. You should not be afraid. Umim mechita kiloti krav elayich. And mechita is destruction or terror. It won't happen to you. Now, how is any of this hanging together? And here we have the pasuk that's probably the hardest one to interpret. Hain gor yagur efes me'oti. Now, what does gor yagur mean? And the Mefarshim are divided in two, not equal camps, but as far as who, you know, how many take what position. But lagur means to be a ger, right? So that means. The one that attaches him will attach himself to nothing but me, which is a very strange thing. Or lagur means, as in Sefer and Parshat Dvarim, lo tagur mne'ish, to be afraid. Hein gor yagur efes me'oti. And we're going to favor this position, this interpretation. You will only be afraid of me, meaning you have nothing to be afraid of but me. Efes me'oti. Migar itach alayich yipol. And this seems to be a rhetorical question. Whoever is gar itach, and it's a play on words, here is the one who has attached himself to you, alayich yipol. You think that he's afraid of someone falling on you, Aleich Yipol means another nation attacking you and subjugating you, nothing to be afraid of. Hine, and here we have a little bit of an issue because the word hain was used in Tetvav to introduce sort of a surprising statement, and the word hine is going to be used, hain is going to be used here again and at the end, but here it's read as hine. Hine anochi barati charash. Now this anochi seems to come back to hine anochi mabitz papuch. So hine anochi barati charash. I'm the one who created the smithy, meaning the ability to forge. Nofeach be'esh pecham, who was able to use the bellows to fire things. Umotzi chli l'maseihu. This takes us back to Yirmiyahu Yudchet, the Beit HaYotzer, hine kachomer b'yad HaYotzer. It's all in my hands. Vanochi barati mashchit l'chabel. I'm also the one who created the one who can destroy things. All right, which again, how is any of this hanging together? Kol kli yutzar alayich lo yitzlach. So any vessel that's created to attack you won't work. And now any tongue that stands up against you, meaning anybody making a libelous claim against you, you will be able to, lahashia here means to disprove, to rebut. Zot nachalat avdei Adonai v'tzid katan me'itin um Adonai. That is the inheritance, that's the legacy of avdei Hashem and their righteousness from me, says Hashem. And before we go further, we got to figure out, I mean, this whole phrasing is odd, and we got to try to put it together and see what's happening. In Pasuk Yod Alfin Bet, God is addressing the city that has not been comforted and saying, I am going to make you a place of unbelievable opulence. And then in Yod Gimel, seems to be a jarring break. He says, and all of your sons will be learned of Hashem. And in Yod Daled, there's another jarring move, which is you will be established through justice and righteousness, and you have nothing to fear. And then Tetvav seems to pick up on that, which is there's nothing to fear but me. And then Tet Zion and Yod Zion seem to be saying, I'm the one who's created everything, and nothing can be created to hurt you. And if the thing that's coming to hurt you is not a physical tool, but a legalistic tool, somebody's coming to challenge you, you will have the ability to defend yourself. And this is what I have for Avdei Hashem. All right, we'll figure it all out, but let's see the end. The end goes to the next parak, which is, again, a jarring dissonance. Not dissonance in the sense of opposition, but just it's almost like a whole different topic. Hoy called some elochulamai. And by the way, Gufa Kasha. In other words, not only is this problematic in relation to what we just read, it's problematic in and of itself. Hoy called Samei L'chulamayim. Hoy is a call. Anybody who's thirsty, go get water. Which, by the way, itself is a strange statement. If the guy's thirsty and he knows there's water there, why do we need you to tell me to go get water? Vasher Ein Lo Kasef. And anybody who doesn't have any silver, L'chu Shivru Vecholu. Now, Lishbor usually means to buy. Remember the most famous scene of Lishbor? Is Lishbor Bar Mitzrayim, when the brothers go down and everybody's going down to buy food from Egypt. L'chu shivru v'echolu, go down and buy and eat, but this is somebody who has enemy money. L'chu shivru v'lo chesav v'lo mechir yayin v'chalab, and go and without any silver or any other payment, you will go and you'll be able to buy not just water, wine and milk. What the heck is going on here? The statement, again, doesn't fit with anything we've just seen. Not only that, but it doesn't make sense in and of itself. Somebody who's thirsty and somebody has no silver, go to the water, not only that, but go and buy and acquire wine and milk with no money. And lama tishkelu chesef below lechem, v'giachem below lesova. And this is clearly related to the previous one, but it's also going in a different direction. The previous one was talking about liquids. Now, why are you weighing out silver without getting bread, and all of your work, your payment, I mean, what you have, your payment for your work, and you're not being satisfied? Again, what's going on? Shim'u shamoa elai v'ichlu tov. Listen to me and you will eat well. V'titanag b'neshem nafshechem. And you will be pleased, you'll have pleasure, you'll have lots of delights. Okay. And before going further, this does seem to echo what we saw in the first half of the Haftarah, that you have nothing to fear as long as you're listening to me, but still we have to go further. Hatuos nechem ulchu elai. So bend your ears and hearken and come to me. Shimu tchinav shechem. If you listen to me, you will live. I will then make an everlasting breed with you, which are the chasadim. We're going to talk about that word of David, which are trustworthy. And David seems to be invoked here because hine eglu umim nitativ, I made him, so that him must be David, a witness for the nations, nagidu mitzavel umim, somebody who's a leader and a commander of all the nations. In other words, I've turned David into like leader of all the nations. A nation that you're not familiar with will call. A nation you don't know is going to run towards you. What the heck is going on? I don't know if you guys are sensitive to this. I'm bothered by this. I feel like I'm in a maze, and every time I take a turn, there's a block, and I got to try in the other direction, and the cheese is nowhere to be found. And it's all for Hashem. And because God has made you glorious. What is going on here? So I'd like to suggest that the best way to understand what is happening in this Haftarah is to look at it from the perspective of its structure. The first two psukim are a unit. That's clear. They talk about God promising he's going to make the city inlaid with gold and precious jewels. The next two psukim are of a different nature, and we got to see how they're related. All of your children will have learned of Hashem, they'll have great peace, and you will be established through justice, and you will distance yourself from oppression and exploitation. What does this mean? So we have to go back into the period. This is a prophecy being given to the Jews who are in Bavel, telling them to come back. This is Nechamah. And you have to remember, how did we end up there in the first place? So I will take you back to what may be the most critical passage in this entire series, which is not in Yeshayahu. It's in Zechariah Chet. We studied it, I think, a couple of years ago. When the delegation was sent to Zechariah and asked, should we continue fasting in Av for the destruction of Mikdash after the Mikdash is rebuilt? And remember Zechariah's answer. Zechariah's answer was, you're asking the wrong question. The question is, fast, don't fast. That's not the issue. The issue is, have you fixed what was broken? Did you go back and listen to the words of the Nevi'im that I sent, notably Yirmiyahu, and correct what was going wrong? They didn't listen, and look what happened. So here, the message seems to be, okay, your children, this is the promise, your children will all have learned Hashem's ways and established the society that Hashem wants, which is the society of tzedakah, and distancing themselves from terror, from exploitation, and from abuse, then you got nothing to be afraid of. Now, let's go back. The next three psukim, so we had two and two. The next three psukim say the following. Basically, God is in control of everything. Now, this is not new. This is something that we saw in the first Haftarah, which was a creation epic. And we saw in the second Haftarah, which is control over the nations. And so here that theme continues. God is the one who created everything. And since God is protecting you because you are building the society that you were supposed to build, and you failed to build, and that's why the Mikdash is destroyed, and Yerushalayim is destroyed, but now you're going to build the proper society. And since God is in control, he's going to make sure nobody will be able to create a weapon that can hurt you. And if anybody wants to challenge you in the court of public opinion, you will have the ability to respond successfully, right? Which is lahashia mishpat, lamishpat hashi, right? So what happens at the end? At the end, we again have three psukim, this water, milk, money thing. What's that about? That seems to be going back to here, and this is what I'd like to suggest, is that this entire Haftarah is made up of two sets of mixed stanzas. Two psukim and three psukim, two psukim and three psukim. The first set is about the success and the protection of Yerushalayim, which is the success and the opulence of Yerushalayim in the first two psukim. And here, the comfort and the security and the assurance that nobody will be able to hurt us. That's on a physical level. That's on a defense level. That's on a material level. The second set of two and three, which is right here, these two psukim yod gimel yod dalet, and then the beginning of the next parak, are about what it will take to get there. What it will take to get there will be for your children to learn the lessons from the Nevi'im and to establish a society based on those norms that they've been teaching. And now let's look at this last section, or the penultimate section, which I believe is the second half of this. What is this water and milk and money and what's it all about? So it's pretty clear, and Chazal picked this up right away, that Ein Mayim Ela Torah, and Tzameh means somebody who does not have Torah, and they realize that they're thirsty. He says, anybody wants, come to water. Now, what does that mean? Vashe Ein Lo Kasef. This takes us to an image that we have all the way back in Shmuel. When Shaul goes looking for his donkeys, the lad says to him, you know, there's an Ish HaLokim, there's a Ro'eh, who can tell us where the donkeys are. And what does Shmuel answer? Ein lanu tshura lavi. We have no gift to bring him. You would bring a gift to the Navi. What does the Navi here say? I don't need your money. You don't need to bring kesa. You don't need to bring anything. You want water? Come. And not only that, you can come. And as if you've transacted, shivru. And not only that, but I will give you not just water. I'll give you milk and wine, which, by the way, are throughout Tanakh metaphors for Torah. Right? You don't need to be weighing out money to buy food. Come to me and listen to me, and listen meaning to the Nevi'im, and you will be satisfied. Which means, again, there's this promise, as we saw here in Yod Gimel Yod Daled, that if you listen and establish the society based on the norms that they were supposed to and that were violated, and that's why the Mikdash was destroyed, you will then have a society that is secure, that is successful, that is then ultimately opulent, and that is established on the lines of Tzedakah u'Mishpat. And then you have nothing to fear. Not only have nothing to fear, but you also will have all the needs that you have will be taken care of. But notice how he makes it clear at the end. So you don't need to try to figure out the metaphor of the water and the milk and the silver and all of this. Hatuos nechem l'chuelai. He says, incline your ears, listen to me. Shimut chinav shechem. You live. You listen to me, you'll live. So now what is this Brit David? Because we're going to step back and ask the question. You have an individual who corrects his behavior or her behavior, walks away from abusive behavior, from exploitative behavior, from jaundiced attitudes, whatever it might be, and improves himself or herself. That's great. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a society. We're talking about a government. We're talking about a country in which the move of the society is, and the move of the people is, to listen to the Nevi'im, to take those messages to heart, and to actually guide their behavior based on those values that are being presented. You do that, and then I'm going to make a brit, which is a brit olam. That's the first thing. A brit olam in the sense that it's never going to be betrayed. This is now forever. And then he says, Chastei David ha'nemanim. What does Chastei David here mean? So it's important to note that the word chesed, which we commonly translate as kindness, in the context, certainly in the context of David, take a look at Tehillim Pei Tet for a real clear example, seems to actually mean loyalty. Right? And so Chastei David ha'nemanim, and you see the word nemanim, would mean that my loyalty to David is now going to drive this brit that I'm going to make with you. Now, who's David? David is not just a great guy. David is not just a great composer of song. David is Hamelech, which means, what is the brit that I'm going to make with you? It's a brit of Machut. A brit not only that you will be have all of your needs taken care of, you'll have security, you'll have opulence, all of that. You are going to be the leaders, as long as you maintain your society according to the values that I presented to you. And now, how does this all come together? This is the whole Haftarah coming together. And both of these passages introduced with Hain. Hain Eid Lumim Natatib, Nagidim Tzavi Lumim. What did I do with David? I made David ultimately in an idyllic picture. It didn't happen in the real world. In an idyllic picture, I made David king of the world, the leader of the world, but as an aide meaning somebody who testifies to Hashem's presence. Right? And so now what's going to happen when that all happens? And by the way, this is alluded to already in Yaakov's Bracha to Yehuda. Ad ki avo shilo, ad perhaps related to aid. Right? Take a look at the vast range of interpretive history there, but including an approach that says that that means ad ki avo shilo, ad ki avo shilo, meaning until the nations come and bring their gifts to the king of Yehuda is the king that all the nations come to pay obeisance to. Hein goy lo teda tikra. You're going to see nations that you never heard of. But goy lo yedaucha lacha yarutsu. Now, nation you never saw, never knew about, they're going to run to you. In other words, you're going to see nations from all around the world coming to you. L'mana d'mai lecha yosh yisrael kefei arach. And that's how the Haftarah ends. They're coming for Hashem. Now, what is this nevuah? What is happening here? So, what seems to be going on in this whole picture is that the Navi is comforting the people. And again, we've moved it up a huge notch. The original consolation was Hashem is in charge of everything. That's number one. Week number two, or day number two of Shiv, if you will. Day number two is that Hashem always loves you. Hashem will not forget you. Lo eshkachech. I'm always thinking of you. That's as far as it gets. And you have to remember who your ancestors are and how close they were to Hashem. Okay. And now we move it up. We say, but there's a much bigger future for you than just being able to come back and rebuild. There is a future now of opulence, of greatness, of international renown, and of ultimately fulfilling the promise given to David, or the promise that David initiated that never really fully happened, which is to be a leader and a teacher to the whole world. But it all cycles back to one thing, which is you in your society establishing yourselves along the lines of the messages of the Navim. So you don't have to worry about water. You have to worry about wine or milk. You don't have to worry about stones. You have to worry about anything. You have to worry about one thing. Listen to me. Hatu oznachem elai. And in the last pasuk of that section, the Navi walks away from the metaphor and makes it very clear that the condition upon which all this is going to happen is you listen to me. And so now I want to make this very real world. In Yeshayahu Bet, which is in the same book, but not the same period. Yeshayahu Bet, very famous nevuah about Acharit HaYamim. Vayav Acharit HaYamim nachon yahar beit Adonai rosh harim nisag mikvaot. All the nations are going to stream to our Beit HaLashem. And what are they going to say? They're going to say, Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah, Dvar Adonam Yerushalayim. We want to go learn from Hashem, the God of Israel, because that's where Torah comes from. What's going to motivate the nations of the world to say, Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah? What's going to motivate the nations of the world to suddenly come to Yerushalayim to learn? The answer is very simple. It's they're going to see a government, a country, a society, which operates on such powerful and elevated ethical norms that it blows them away. Like I say, we really want to learn from you because we see you know what it's all about. And so here in this section of Yeshayahu, this Navi giving voice to that image says, this is all in your hands. And it could have been what you had 100 years ago, but you blew it. Your parents blew it. Your grandparents blew it. Okay. And now it's something that you really have access to, and it's something that you're able to do. This is the third step of Nechama. And, of course, it will continue as we look at Anochi, Anochi Umanachem Chem, and we're going to see more, perhaps, a step back to a more real-world image, because this is quite idyllic. But this is where the Haftarot take us.